Tantrum House Board Game Podcast is recorded live from Studio WKRB in Greenville, South Carolina. This podcast is brought to you by our friendly local game store, Boardwalk, purveyors of fine games, Bezier Games, the new classics, Final Frontier Games, bringing friends and families closer together, The Game Steward, your second chance at Kickstarter games, and Game Toppers LLC, upgrading your gaming experience. Your hosts are Prognosticator Supreme, peering into the swirling mist of future Kickstarters and glimpsing the diamonds in the rough. So buckle up, seriously, especially if you're driving right now, because you're about to arrive at the Tantrum House.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. Today we got Will Meadows,
Sarah Meadows,
Kevin Delp,
Melissa Delp,
and Apprentice Dan
in the house.
Thank you guys so much for joining us for yet another fantastic episode. We've been having all kinds of fun as usual. In fact, this week Sarah and I had the opportunity, and Melissa and Monica and some other people from our team, to attend ScarabCon in Columbia, South Carolina. So I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit tonight. We also just got done playing a bunch of board games and hanging out with some friends. And what was some of the cool stuff you guys made to the table this week?
Melissa and I continued our Clank Legacy campaign.
I really like Clank Legacy, and I'm willing to play it every single week, but two of our four are not quite as enthusiastic.
We're not Clank fans.
Clanking.
So it's Clank, not the legacy aspect that you don't like?
I like the legacy aspect. I think they did a great job with legacy. I just feel that Clank itself is so ingrained in what you're doing that every game so far, we've played five or six games so far, every game, awesome cards come out. Awesome cards come out in the
Adventure.
Basically the pool where you buy the cards. They never come out when it's my turn. They come out when it's other people's turns. Whereas in like Dominion, all the cards are available. I could see a Dominion Legacy very pretty cool.
Ooh, but, perfect sense.
Right? Mm. But Clank Legacy, it's like if you don't get the cards that you need, your deck is just like, well, I guess I'm just going to try and move over here and do things. Now, the one cool thing is because it is Legacy, you can sort of go over to like these places where you can read from the Book of Secrets, which is cool. But
do we need spoiler warnings on this? Are we all good?
No, the Book of Secrets is fine. And I do enjoy the story. I do enjoy that. The mechanics themselves, it's so part of the game that it's so random that, you know, it's go down to the dungeon, go get your whatever artifact and go back out. That's the game. Mm-hmm. And I just can't get past that.
Is it just because you lose every time?
I think a lot of people would disagree with Kevin.
Oh, yeah. People love Clank.
Well, I agree that the luck aspect is one of those things that you either can't overcome or you get lucky. And it can make all the difference in the gameplay.
We've had one person in our group, not Melissa and not me, one of the other guys in the group, almost every game has the perfect card comes out and he's got the right amount of money or insight, as they say in the game, to purchase those cards.
And does he win it every time?
He has not won every time.
Oh. Well.
So I think we've played five games. Our friend Paul Michael has won two. Ben has won two. And I have won one. And Kevin has not won any.
Oh, poor Kevin.
Let's just say the games I do really, really well at, other people do really, really, really well at. So it's like, and it's kind of funny because the scores each game aren't like everyone's at 60. Everyone's at 60 every time. Like a good score could be 50 one game. A good score could be 100 the next game.
Wow.
And it's like, so the scores are disparaging as well. So it's not like, oh, if I get 70, I might be able to pull this out. Oh no, someone just got 100.
Now, what are the like catch the leader stuff in there? You lose every time. It's just that's too bad for you, or is it like help you out to be able to get additional cool stuff?
No, because there's no really catch the leader mechanic.
I'm trying to think some of the things you do by point order top to bottom, and other things I think you might do from bottom to top.
Yeah, but when I start the next game, I don't have anything special that I'm getting. Unless, because you randomly start out, we could decide, not random start, we could decide, although you're pulling from a deck, so, yeah. You get to basically pull from a deck to have an asymmetrical start card to add to your discard pile that eventually gets shuffled into your deck.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I even feel about legacy games campaign, I guess is more a better word for the ones that I'm thinking of. But I kind of feel like if you aren't winning, like sorry, you're just not the strongest person in the party, and maybe you don't deserve to. Now, this one's not a cooperative one, so maybe that's the big difference.
This is competitive.
But, in the cooperative ones, yeah, I think if you lose, you just lose, and I don't know. Competitive, I think they should help you out.
A little catch. I'm okay with not catch a leader. I just feel like the randomness, just I can't overcome it.
So. I think this is a place where you could implement a good house rule of whoever loses might get to choose their starting stuff.
Yeah, maybe. Cool.
I don't know. That's a good house rule, but that's up to your group.
Did you get to try anything out cool this week, Dan?
Yeah, my wife has actually gotten back into board gaming.
Whoa.
Yeah, so we're pulling out some older stuff. We got Carcassonne on the table.
Cool.
Specifically the Sheep and Hill expansion. I think that's like expansion 9.
Oh, wow. I haven't played that one. I've played tons of Carcassonne expansions, but not that one.
I really like the Sheep and Hill. That's a fun one. You get these little, you put a shepherd out on your field, and you can, anytime that field grows, you can then draw a random sheep token, hopefully, from the bag, but it could also be a wolf.
What?
And so at some point you can decide to recall the flock and get points for all the sheep, or if you draw a wolf, he scares away all your sheep, or probably eats them. But we had fun with that.
Scares them away.
Yes.
Air quotes.
And then for every board gamer, you know, there's that dream moment when your wife says, let's play a game. Well, what do you want to play? I will play anything on the shelf.
Wow.
What? So that happened Saturday night after the kids went to bed. And I literally froze. I was in this moment of like...
You were thinking like, does she need a new dishwasher? What? A new dress? What is she trying to get out of this?
No, it was more just like, well, there are these games that would be really cool to play, but I want her to ask me this question again, so I should probably not do those.
good thinking. Yeah.
So we landed on
the
Quest for El Dorado, and she really enjoyed it. She had a blast with that, and even at the end was like, you know what, our oldest kid would love playing this. So that's what we've been up to at home.
That does sound wise. In hindsight, I'm thinking I shouldn't have even said new dishwasher. That was like, I'm surprised I didn't get a punch to the side of that.
Hey, I got a new dishwasher, totally okay.
We had the opportunity to go up to Scarab this past weekend. Sarah and I and Melissa was there as well. We did some overlap covering a table. We were doing some game demos. We did. Sarah did a 27-hour
Parks marathon. Yeah, it was great. We had a lot of people. This was their first time playing Parks. And I don't think there was anybody there who didn't thoroughly enjoy the game. So if you have not gotten this one to the table, I'm sorry. It is currently in high demand, and they are waiting for more reprints to show up to stores. But if you can check out their Kickstarter in 2 weeks, basically, or maybe a week from this episode, and try and get the base game, I would do so. Super great game.
Was it actually like a tournament of sorts, or was it just everybody really wanted to play it, so they kept asking you?
I had a tournament that I ran, and then I also taught other people who saw the tournament already going and like, I want to play this game too. So, I taught the game a few times over the weekend, and I also got a few other new games I had not gotten a chance to try out. One was Scoville. I want to thank Kevin Brent for teaching that one to me. We did a two-player game, which was new for him. He has always done larger player count games. And that one turned out interesting. It changed a little bit the way that you thought through your turns. You're basically in turn order, you voting for or bidding for turn order, and whoever gets the bid will choose the turn order for or what place they would like. With two players, it becomes very interesting because you first plant a pepper that you have, and then the other player will plant, and then it goes in reverse turn order for harvesting, so you can potentially block the other player in the path that you're taking to harvest, and then you're going to go to market to sell. And you know, obviously the market will go in the original turn order direction. Mm. So it goes back and forth with two players, and there were some interesting things that came up, and I thoroughly enjoyed the game, and I wish I would have gotten this one to the table much sooner than I did this weekend.
Cool. We were able to play a tournament at Avalon, And we played that with four players. It is a 3-6 player. Yes,
this was not at Scarab. This was with our friends at home.
Sorry, just, you know, more people, more playing.
You're allowed to have fun at home, too.
Tournament Avalon is a 3-6 player trick-taking game based in the Arthurian legends. And this is actually sort of similar to Tournament at Camelot, which came out a few years ago. And in the game, it's very similar in mechanics, and I'll talk about the differences in just a second. But in the game, you are trying to not be the loser. You're not trying to take tricks. Basically, the person that loses a trick takes all those cards, and those cards are basically hits against you. And getting hits against you makes you get wounds, and those wounds eventually will kill you.
Yes, so like many trick-taking games, there are several suits of cards, and you have to follow suit. There's one suit that is wild that can then be any type of suit. There are special cards that do lots of different things, like making the highest card in the trick the winner.
Instead of the lowest.
Instead of the lowest. Winner, meaning loser. Well, you know. And then ones that are worth extra hit points, things like that. So it's kind of the theme of the cards that you're putting in are your battle strength.
Yeah, and every player has asymmetrical abilities because you get basically to play as Merlin or Arthur or Lancelot, or Melissa played the queen elf or something like that.
Yes, I was an elf queen.
An elf queen. So definitely broad genre. But yeah, really enjoyed playing that. It's a trick-taking game where you can sort of guess what people are playing, but there are some powerful cards in there that can really throw it off. So,
and there is a sort of catch the leader mechanic.
There's a catch the leader mechanic because there's godsend cards that you get at the end of the round for the people who are dying.
And those can be very powerful and help you out in the next round.
Yeah. So
one other one that I got to play while we were at Scarab was Spirit Island. Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Interesting. I don't know if I loved it or hated it, but it was interesting. Sarah played it as well.
Yeah. So in the game, you play as the island, and settlers are coming in and building towns and cities, and you're trying to get them off the island. So I thought the game was very punishing. It was very difficult to do well, but I think that's the point.
Right. Cooperative game was difficult. You are the island, I guess. You're the spirits of the island, so each player has their own unique player powers. You know, I was controlling like the oceans and the tides, and another guy was controlling the lightning god, and what were you? I don't remember what you're.
I was the earth.
The earth itself. And the mechanics for the AI were really good. I thought that was cool. You reveal a card and it shows you where the settlers are going to come. Mm-hmm. And then you know that on the next turn, those explorers are going to build a town. Mm-hmm. And on the next turn, they're going to build a city. And on the next turn, they're going to drop waste tokens. What were they called? I don't remember what they were. Black bubbly tiles of death.
It was blight.
Blight. And so you've got to work to maintain all that. The game, you feel like you're doing pretty good for the first couple turns as you're, you know,
it's
utilizing your new powers.
It takes over quickly.
The only thing I really didn't enjoy about the game, and this was maybe just luck of the draw, was that the character I picked, and there's a bunch of characters in the game, the character that I picked had a very easy set of cards to play. So my turn would take me like 6 seconds playing this card, and then I had to wait 20 minutes, it seemed like, for the other four players to take their turn each round. And I was like, oh man, this is just not moving fast enough. And then as the game progressed, you know, you look down and you realize, like, oh man, the entire island is covered in civilization. There's no way we're going to recover from this, even though I just got this new cool power card. And then, yeah, we just died.
Oh, so you didn't win?
We did not.
Not even close.
Oh, well, it was your first time.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it was our first play. Okay. So
potentially you could do better, I'm sure. We kind of just got unlucky. There's the cards that tell you where the settlers are coming are very specific land types, and all of a sudden we hit this one that was just every coastal region is going to have explorers on it, and after that turn, it was pretty much over.
Dan, what else did you play?
Well, tonight we got to pull out Etten from WizKids Games.
Ooh, yeah, that's coming to the market soon.
Yeah, I think March.
Yeah.
I think I played that with Ryan, Katie, and Melissa. That one's a lot of fun. It's you're teaming up with your partner, your allies, and you're fighting the people adjacent to you. So you have this phase where you're helping your allies, and then you're kind of skirmishing, and then ultimately you go to war. You're kind of secretly placing your cards face down, and your opponents, you go back and forth, and then you're trying to defend these various aspects of your territory. So I liked it a lot. You've got different player powers based on the race that you are, and a lot of strategy going into that. But it was still, 2 to 8 players, about 45 minutes. Once we figured out how to play, it clicked along pretty quickly.
I know why you liked it.
Yeah.
So. I heard you decimated the other people.
Souls. Yeah, so Katie and I were allies, and we were playing against Ryan and Dan, and it was a learning game. So the first battle, we were just kind of
a learning game. I love it. I love it.
Let's just say at the end of the game, I had 47 points, and Dan had over 100.
Woo!
I had 116. And the cool thing with this, and I admit I did feel kind of badly about this,
a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. You add up your scores as allies. So Katie and Melissa had 90-something together.
Combined,
and I still had 116.
Without Ryan's score even in. And did he have negative points? Because that would have been cool.
Ryan added, I think, like another 100-plus. So
really?
Combined, it was 200-something.
So your powers were pretty powerful.
I think, looking back, our two groups, we were the dwarves and somebody else.
Giants.
The Giants, yeah.
Well, that didn't sound like they would keep up together.
They teamed up against the knights and the orcs. And something about the dwarves and giants, we generated a lot of cash. And so that allowed us to just buy card after card. In the final round, Melissa, I think you played like 6 cards.
Right. You were playing cards a lot after I was.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, but a really neat game. Something I would love to play again. And they expand up to 8. They even say you can combine games and have like a massive game of 16 players.
Wow. So, yeah. That would be crazy.
That would.
Did you, Melissa, feel like it was the type of thing where it was unbalanced and needed some work? Or did you feel like, oh yeah, this time I would change my strategy and I would totally rock it?
Definitely seeing how the game plays in the different phases, I would do better next time. We were still trying to figure out some of the keywords, and it really was open the box, glance at it, and start playing. So I'm sure there were a few things that we probably didn't get exactly right that may have given more power to something or less power to something than it should have. But and then Katie and I were playing on the wrong sides of our boards, actually. Which
the harder
probably,
side?
Definite learning game, yeah.
Which probably
so there's like an A
also,
side and a B side?
No, it's just how it matches up against your opponents. So you're supposed to kind of have the same territory lining up against each other.
Basically, each player has 3 areas, and you're supposed to play with your boards across from each other. So my slot is directly across from one of Dan's slots, and we had them reversed, so the right slots weren't facing each other.
Well, other than that, did you enjoy the gameplay itself, like what you were doing in the game?
I don't know that I would say it's the type of game that I would go, oh, I want to pull this off the shelf and play. But it's not one that I would avoid either. So I'm going to put it in kind of the okay area for me.
If someone says you have to play Clank Legacy this weekend, you're okay.
I like Clank Legacy, Kevin.
I'm kidding.
But there were interesting things you could do with the cards and combos. I'm just normally am kind of weak at the strategy of trying to anticipate what my opponent is going to play.
I understand.
And figuring out, should I add more strength to this area or to that area? Are there high cards there? Are there low cards? That sort of thing.
And I think Ryan, Katie, and I all kind of agreed we would pull this off a lot. Like, we really enjoyed how this played and all the different player powers.
I heard Ryan's going to switch out one of his learn to plays for Etten. So that's what the word on the street is.
Yeah,
I think
the Tantrum Con.
Shadowrun is off the table now and Etten's on the table. Poor Ryan. But that, I think that's good.
His favorite game, but maybe this could be a new favorite.
Right, yeah, I think part of it with Ryan's game is it's late on Sunday afternoon. So a lot of people might be doing other things at that point.
Party, party. Well, let's take it from here and jump into our Kickstarter conniption.
Kickstarter Conniption.
This episode, we'll be talking about five games coming to Kickstarter the week of January 27th, 2020. Still having a hard time every saying time. 2020. I'd say 2000, and then I want to say 19, but it's 20. All right, Kevin, why don't you start us off?
That's quite all right, because what happened with my last block video is I put 2019 in January, and Melissa, I think...
I saw a comment on it, and I went and changed the title for Kevin, so it would say 2020.
Yeah, we probably lost some viewers on that one at the beginning. They're like, 2019. Sorry. Going on to this week on Kickstarter, Formal Ferret Games will be launching the Rival Networks. If you're familiar with the Networks, a pretty popular game from Formal Ferret, this is very similar to that one, but this is a standalone two-player version of the Networks. Very similar in the original gameplay, but a little bit more streamlined and plays in about 30 to 45 minutes. In the game, you are like networks and you are battling against other networks trying to fill in time slots and get the right shows and people and things like that. So very similar to that, but there's definitely more newer stuff in this one. But a two-player version. So I think that will hone in the tit-for-tat going against each other. So, yeah, interested in this one. It has area majority, card drafting, set collection, and if those types of mechanics sound interesting to you, check out the Rival Networks from Formal Ferret this week. Dan.
All right. Coming January 28th, we have an expansion to Arcane Alley called Moonstruck Market. Arcane Alley is a 2-6 player set collection type of game where you've got a grid of 9 cards. It's like golf. I don't know if you guys ever played golf, just the card game.
Yeah.
Only on steroids.
Which is similar to silver.
Yeah, yeah. In this one, you've got a grid, a 3x3 grid of face-down cards, and you're trying to sell matching sets. Mm-hmm. Now, the Moonstruck Market brings for one a market. So instead of just drawing the top card of the draw pile or the top card of the discard pile, you can also choose one of three cards from the market at different costs.
Right.
So it gives you some different variability and some choice in what you're bringing into your goods that you're selling. It also brings in a moon phase. So each card has a moon symbol on it. So now you can do different things, like you can sell mixed sets. So instead of having to have three crystal balls, you could have two crystal balls and a gelatinous ball, as long as the type is the same. So it makes selling things a little bit easier. And then you can also sell based on that moon symbol. So if you have three half moons in a row, you could sell those cards as well. And they brought in some different abilities, different ways to cash in on that moon symbol to maybe make those abilities a little more stronger or a little stronger.
Cool.
Yeah, I remember playing the base game back before it was on Kickstarter last time. And I enjoyed the game. It kind of, it's not really memory, but a little bit of that trying to remember where things are and make those matches. And it sounds like the expansion is just kind of taking it up another level with being able to manipulate and do more things with your cards.
Yes, definitely.
Did you actually get to play this one too? Or was that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've played this a few times with a few different people and got to see different sides of it, different player counts. So it's been fun. We enjoyed it.
Cool. Cool stuff.
Will, how about you?
I'm looking at the game Rocket Man from designer Martin Wallace. He's brought us a bunch of popular games over the years. Brass Birmingham was one of his big ones last year, I think, or 2 years ago. The remake of that one. Rocket Man is a 1-4 player game that takes about 30 to 60 minutes. You've got some card drafting going on. It's set in space as you are racing to just make it into space and be the first to like found new lands. It's a sci-fi game, but it's not like, at least from what I can tell from the card art and stuff, it's not like aliens and zombies and stuff. It's much more like a futuristic real life space race. I don't know. All the card art looks really sharp. It looks like it could be real rockets in the future. So I really like the style of it. One of my pet peeves is when games call themselves like fast-paced games, and then they're just like a normal game. But the definition, the description on this game actually sounds pretty interesting. It's a deck-building confrontation game with swift decision-making and tactical choices. I actually don't have a great feel for what actually happens in the game, but the mechanics that it uses is bag building and deck building. You're doing hand management. There's also hidden roles in the game, and it's a race game. So they've kind of got a plethora of options going on for you. Like I said, the artwork looks really cool, and I'm sure with Martin Wallace behind us that the mechanics for it are really refined. I don't know. Do you know what the date was on when this one launches? I'm sure it's
this week.
Tuesday. But it looks sharp. I would love to learn more. I may need to watch some videos on it because it's definitely the type of game that looks like it has some potential to be a big one. So, Martin Wallace, Rocket Man.
Men.
Ooh, you are correct. Men. And women, probably. All right, Sarah, what's up?
Coming January 28th is an expansion called Ascension to It's a Wonderful World.
Already?
Yes. Was this released at Essen?
A year ago.
A year ago at Essen. Yeah. I don't think it's... I've seen it over in the U.S. all that long.
Lucky Duck is just bringing it over now.
Yeah. So those of us in the U.S. are just getting familiar with this one, but there will be an expansion launching on Kickstarter. This one will add a sixth player. Let me tell you a little bit about the base game. The base game is similar to Seven Wonders in that you are drafting cards. The one main difference, though, is that you are gaining resources in a very specific order, and then you're going to use those resources to pay for other buildings. So in this expansion, it adds a sixth player. It adds some new mechanics to the game. I'm kind of guessing. So the original game had a red and blue side. This new expansion box has a gold and purple. So I'm not sure if it will change those two different factions that you can gain. I don't know. That's just a guess. Most of the information is in French, and I'm not able to translate all of it just on my phone. But they will have the heritage box available for the campaign and some of the extra add-ons, but they will not have just the retail version. So if you didn't get the base game yet, just the heritage box will be available for the Kickstarter. And then they also have a couple of campaigns that will go along with it. So I'm interested to check those campaigns out. But that is It's a Wonderful World coming. It's a Wonderful World Ascension coming January 28th. Melissa.
Coming sometime the end of January is Deep State New World Order, published by Crowd Games.
They did say it might be the beginning of February.
Okay. But so either this week or maybe the week, a week or two after that. Yeah. So coming soon. This game is for 2 to 4 players, plays in about an hour-ish, maybe a little more, a little less. And it is set in a kind of dystopian world. It's our world. But it's about the time when a creation of a single world government is possible. So you command a subdivision at the Committee, which is a secret organization working towards becoming that government. And during the game, you have these agents. They are kind of meeples, wooden little figures that you are going to send to operations or other, not events, but things to
upgrade your abilities.
I can't remember what the thing was called.
The covert affairs?
Covert operations and objectives. Yeah. That's what they are. It's all in that kind of spy, secret, conspiracy type
secret society
theme.
Yeah.
And basically you're sending these agents to certain cards, and if you can have the most agents on the card, you will be able to collect the card, and the cards have symbols and things on them that you're going to use to complete treaties, a little bit like a set collection aspect to the game. And you're trying to get these symbols to be able to do other things, to be able to get points, and you really have to manage your people because you only get a certain number back each round. So if I send 7 or 8 to do something, it'll be a long time before I get them all back.
Yeah.
So Kevin, Will, and I played this, and we will be having a playthrough of this on our channel. If you want to see how it works, this is Deep State New World Order, coming to Kickstarter soon.
It was really interesting. We didn't quite get to finish the game, so I don't know if I won for sure.
I probably did, personally.
Kevin was definitely trashing us. I didn't realize, so what were the top things called? The whatever you just said earlier?
Not the covert operations.
That wasn't the covert operations? There's a lot of really cool terminology going on that I feel like I need to...
Projects.
The projects, yes.
I didn't realize the projects had secret scoring bonus.
They weren't secret. They were printed right on the cards that everyone could see. On them.
So Kevin was definitely dominating those. It was interesting. I started off and I felt like it was going to be an engine builder. Yeah. Like I just was able to play a couple of my...
Agent meeples?
No, the cards, the... Small
treaties.
Cards, treaties. I was able to like link a couple of treaties, and I was like, "Oh, okay.
Yeah, that you're doing good with that."
Yeah, engine building. This is going to be interesting. But then, like, that wasn't really the whole point of the game.
No.
So I kind of was going in the wrong direction. I'll be very interested in when we play this.
Cool. That is Deep State. Like I said, check out our playthrough. Like Melissa said, check out our playthrough video. That ends our Kickstarter conniption. We have an interview with David Gerard, so let's welcome him to the house.
Hey, thanks, man.
Well, we have you back again because you are launching a Kickstarter with Junk Spirit Games called Slip Strike. Tell us a little, before we jump into that, tell us a little bit about Junk Spirit Games.
So Junk Spirit Games is a very small team. We're based in Washington. There's currently four of us on the team, and we've kind of blown up with a couple contract workers up to as high as eight. But we're just basically making small games that are family friendly, and this next one, Slip Strike, is our fifth game.
So this was actually already launched on Kickstarter a little while ago, and you decided to cancel the campaign and relaunch. Tell us a little bit about the thought process behind that.
Yeah, well, you know, when we launched it, we had I have another person that's kind of in my tier, and he's working on a game that he was really excited about as well. And so, you know, everybody in the Kickstarter world was like, "Hey, don't launch in November, December. It's a bad idea." And of course, both me and this other person were like, "Ah, we're fine." And, we were wrong. And so basically, I'm no stranger to looking dumb. So I basically had to accept that I looked dumb by trying to launch in November, December. As a lot of our core, backers were telling us that, you know, they just don't have the resources to be able to kind of commit to something they're not going to be able to get for a while they're trying to also, you know, hold money for Christmas time and, you know, the holidays and whatnot. So totally understandable that we're basically just going to bring it back. And so bringing it back in February 10th, is going to be really great for us because we've kind of marketed our game as a game for couples, and it's right before Valentine's Day. So, of course, you're not going to get the game before Valentine's Day, but we'll be able to hit the marketing on that and basically be like, "Hey, you know, here's a game that's good for two people." And so it all kind of works out. And, of course, it doesn't delay our schedules at all. It doesn't, you know, nothing's going to bad happen to anybody, any of the backers. The fact that we didn't, fund back then, again, the only bad news here is that I just looked dumb.
So, I find it very humorous that you're talking about, oh, for couples and Valentine's Day, and then basically the theme of your game is trying to assassinate each other and knife each other and shoot each other.
But two players are doing it, right?
So it's a two-player game. So I kind of always – our thing for this is like if Mr. and Mrs. Smith were – the movie, right? The one that had Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie in it. If they were like a science fiction kind of game, but also kind of had a 70s aesthetic, this is where we'd be. So, you know, all of our games are very family friendly. So yes, this one has, gunplay in it. But the actual like background, the theme of the game is that you're not actually trying to kill each other. You're just trying to knock each other back out of the dimension you're in. And so by striking at each other, you essentially expended energy to defend against it, and then eventually you will have to be knocked out of the dimension, and then you lose.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the Slip Strike itself. It's a rondel sort of the locations are set up in a circle, and then you are two different agents with – they all have the same cards in their hand, right?
Yeah, that's right. So at the beginning of the game, you'll put the locations in a circle, as you said, and that basically defines the board. And there's just five different locations, and then everybody gets the same 10 cards in your hand, so you have the same exact resources. And as you play them, you actually put them out onto a cooldown system, so that I know what is likely that you could be playing. And then we're basically just trying to guess while also bluffing what you're doing. So it's kind of like I always describe it to be like the poison scene from Princess Bride, where you're trying to like, well, if you thought that I was going to do that, and if you knew that I was going to do that, then I'm going to do this. And you kind of go back and forth like that. But as you strike into different zones and you're hoping not to take a strike yourself, you can expend one of your teleport cards, which normally will let you bounce around the board to anywhere you want. You can expend the teleport card permanently as a discard and get out of the strike. And one, eventually you get to a spot where you can't expend a teleport card, and then you will have to then take the strike and lose, and you'll be knocked out of dimension.
I do remember we played a prototype of this back in the fall, Melissa and I, and mm-hmm. I do remember going into a location thinking, oh, Melissa will never think that I'm going to go here. She was already in that spot, and she was thinking, oh, I bet he's going to come here, and I'll just knife him. And
Jab.
Yep. Nice. No, absolutely. And that's definitely part of the play of the game, is like you're trying to guess what your opponent's doing and trying to also play a little wildly so that they can't just guess what you're going to do. I had one of my favorite moments in the game is I had a couple that had they were older, and they came and they sat down at the table and I explained the game. And then the first five rounds, they played the exact same two cards back to back. And I was like, wait a minute. And they were never striking each other. And I was like, wait a minute. How long have you guys been married? And they're like, 31 years. And I said, you guys are playing as one mind. And then the woman heard that, and she just immediately started playing chaotically and was just ended up smoking the guy by the end of that game, just because she was, you know, doing things that are just really out of character for her.
Cool. So tell me a little bit about the campaign itself. What will people be able to back it for and other things?
Yeah. So what we're going to do is we are going to be just well, the cool things about Slip Strike is that it is a two-player game. We're going to make a blue edition and an orange edition. So editions are going to be very similar to each other. They'll have different asset cards, but the exact rules and everything else will be exactly the same. So, you know, just depending on which color you want, you can buy one or the other. But if you want to play a four-player game, which would actually be a 2v2 game, you can get both editions, and then they'll actually lock together, and they'll make a larger round board, and then you're playing a 2v2 game. So basically we have those pledge levels will just very simply be a blue edition or a orange edition. That's two different pledge levels. And then we'll have one pledge level that has both editions together. Very simple.
So it's a pretty quick sounding game. It's only like 10 to 15 minutes on Board Game Geek. Is that double when you play it as four players, or is that
actually it's surprisingly faster when you play 2v2? Yeah, because it's just so chaotic. Everybody's just dropping bombs on each other, basically. Because the way the game works, you're striking into multiple zones at the same time, and if you can strike both of your opponents in the same strike, which often happens, especially as everybody's trying to get close to each other to get their vital strike. In it's just very chaotic. I've seen games of Slip Strike 2v2 where somebody gets eliminated by the fourth turn, whereas most games of Slip Strike usually take 9 to 10 turns, so somebody can get eliminated really quickly, and then all of a sudden their partner is trying to fend off two players, and you know, sometimes it goes bad, sometimes it goes good, right?
Fun stuff. You guys have a pretty unique aesthetic to a lot of your games. Sorry, can you still hear me?
Can you hear?
Yeah, I can hear.
You guys,
yep, absolutely.
Usually a pretty unique aesthetic. Is the same guy doing art on this one as well? Is this a new direction? What's the story on the art?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a good question. Justin Hillgrove is our artist, and he's the artist on this one too. But we also, when we made Bride of the Queen, we brought on another artist who's been working with us as well, Zachary Vale. And on this one, much like we did with our previous games, Justin is enjoying working with us making games because I basically let him use any medium he wants. So in previous games, he's done full paintings. He's done, a lot of like line art work, and then he's either inked it, in real life and then scanned it, or he's done it digitally. This one, he did all the work digitally. And so we wanted to try this new kind of cool aesthetic, do this little 70s style. And then Zachary Vale basically came in and emulated that style. And so essentially, Justin Hillgrove has done all the art for the blue edition, and Zachary Vale has done all the art for the orange edition. And if you look at the two of them, they're very similar, right? But we keep the style going. And I just thought it would be cool to make this kind of like Catch Me If You Can kind of like 1970s kind of aesthetic with like silhouetted characters with just a tie, and just kind of keeping it really simple like that. So we wanted to go with like a simple, like elegant look to the game because the game is so simple itself.
Yeah, I love the style. The illustrations for the weapons are all very cool, and I really like the idea of two different color options. I'm obviously picking the blue one, but yeah. you guys can play with the orange one if you want to. It also looks pretty slick.
Yeah.
So this will be launching February 10th on Kickstarter. While we have you on the show here, I'd like to talk a little bit about Battle of the Bards. Is that is that in backers' hands and all that?
So interestingly enough, we've always been really fast with our shipping and our dates, just because we've always really locked up with really good manufacturers. So we actually we were supposed to send out all the games for Battle of Bards somewhere like in September, I think, of last year, and we actually shipped everything out by July. So we were like 3 months early. This will probably be something very similar happens with Slipstrike, Battle of Bards is in everybody's hands, and everybody's been really enjoying it. I've got a lot of great feedback on it, and it does exactly what I wanted to do, which was just be a really strong deck builder with a really crazy dice mechanic that kind of comes out of nowhere.
Very cool stuff. Do you guys have other stuff in the pipe already? Are you working ahead on the next one? Is this your full-time gig, or are you also...
Oh yeah,
like most of us work. Okay,
so two parts to that question. So on to the second part first. This is not my full time gig, and it is nobody's full time gig on our team. We're basically just doing this just because we love it, and it's a great side gig. We don't make an absolute killing in money, but we're not losing money, right? So might as well just keep going. And we're having a great time, right? And as we continue to make games, it's, you know, for me, I kind of like think that I want to make a different. Like, I want all my games to feel very different from each other. So nobody can say like, that's that kind of game. Oh, that feels like a Junk Spirit Games game. Cause I want them to be like, just very different from each other. So of the games that we're working on in the future, we have two expansions that we're working on, one for Crows and one for Bards. I'm very excited about Battle of Bards only because of this pun I'm about to drop on you. So it's going to be the expansion for Battle of Bards will be a two-player standalone where it's very brutal and you're attacking each other and you're like knocking other characters off stage. There's going to be a whole item system where you can like break each other's guitars and whatnot. And, and so it's going to be very brutal and it's going to be called No Holds Barred. All right. So,
nice.
I love to drop the pun for anything. So then we're working on an expansion for Crows as well. And we're hoping that the two of those see the light of day. I'm pretty sure that Bards will be there. And I have two other games that we're working on, which will be in the future. And, we move kind of slow because we're such a small team and this is a side gig. And we usually make about one game a year. So, you know, next year's game will probably be an absolutely new game. But if we do expansions, they'll kind of slip into the schedule, so to speak.
I know Ryan and Katie will be super interested in the Crows expansion because they love the Tyler Sigmund's Crows game. They have the deluxe version. And keep us up to date on that one. And, of course, the Battle of the Bards. I enjoyed all that dice rolling that you do. So, yeah, sounds cool.
Yeah.
Any other final remarks about the Slipstrike game coming to Kickstarter before we have to say goodbye?
No, absolutely. I think that, I appreciate talking with you guys. And, I think that for me, every time Slipstrike is played, I just see everybody really enjoying it. As they move from their second to third turn, they understand how the game works. And again, you're in that poison scene from Princess Bride trying to guess what your opponent's doing and hoping your opponent doesn't know what you're thinking.
Man, sounds like a lot of fun. Can't wait to see it and to hopefully congratulate you on a successful campaign. Best of luck on that. And thanks so much for joining us at the show. We enjoyed chatting with you.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Very cool talking to David and learning a little bit more about what they've got going on over at Junk Spirit Games. Wish them the best of luck on their campaigns coming up. And some of the other stuff that we've got coming up is
TantrumCon.
Oh, man. So you're listening to this. It's this weekend.
It's this weekend.
Oh, wow. Yes.
What?
Can't even believe it. So in 5 days or less, 3 days if you're listening to this when it launches, we'll be at the warehouse picking up thousands of free games to bring to the Marriott Gaming Convention Center.
In Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Where we will be hosting our second annual Tantrum Con.
And we want you to be there.
We would love for you to be there. We've got a bunch of people who have already got badges. It's not too late for you to get yours. There's still plenty of events for you to sign up for. I think, have we maxed out?
And room. There's plenty.
No. We haven't maxed out on our events. In fact, we've added some new ones in the last week.
Sweet. So some of those things include things like a giant, giant's the wrong word, but... Humongous. Lots of people playing Cartographers. How many? Yes. We have 100 people signed up already?
Not yet.
Close.
But this is a week before so when we're recording. So it
maybe
could be filled
time.
Up. But it may be filled. I don't know. But check it out. This may be the most people playing Cartographers
World record?
at the same time.
In the history of the world for
well,
this year.
We're going to need a lot of colored pencils. Don't worry, they're already ordered.
Ooh, cool.
Excellent. We're also going to be doing lots of tournameals, which is a thing that we're working on developing and perfecting, and I think we're pretty close.
Yeah.
They've been a lot of fun in previous years, and I'm looking forward to these ones. We'll be playing games while eating food, while giving away prizes, while having a blast. Some of those include games by Bezier. We'll be playing Silver.
Yep.
Spin Master is sponsoring a Chunky Monkey Business ice cream buffet game, which is going to be a lot of fun. We're playing Letter Jam from CGE and Eating
we'll
Toast
be,
and Jams.
Yeah,
and
we'll be
Starbucks.
Having a nice brunch with that one.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing one for our game, Steam Court.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner from 25th Century will be there with an actual chicken dinner. And a couple more, I think, too. I don't know, don't forget
the VIP dinner.
The VIP dinner.
Yeah. We just put that up for sale, so there's still spots available.
Yeah, we're having
hopefully
Derek and Lizzie Funkhauser from the Board Game Spotlight and as designers for Skybound.
Marty from Rolling Doesn't Take Names should be there.
Yeah, cool. So,
and I think Richard Lanius.
Sweet. So,
yeah, we got some peeps there.
Going to be a lot of fun. Man, just lots and lots of stuff going on. Tons of playthroughs, tons of giveaways, win-to-win raffles.
I'm super excited for the VIP dinner. It's going to be entertaining for the audience and a lot of fun for us, too, participating.
Most definitely.
Yeah, and don't forget the Play to Wins. We have over 100 games that people can play, put their name on a sheet, and then at the end, we'll randomly pick a name from the sheet to win the game.
And a lot of those are, I don't even know, I won't say a percentage, but a ton of those are brand new games that are just out this year.
Mm-hmm.
Big thanks to all the sponsors and contributors who have helped to donate games and make that
our
really
platinum sponsor, Keymaster Games.
Yeah.
We have some news about that on our next podcast.
What? Top secret stuff still.
I'm excited. There are a few exhibitors who are offering something really cool to those at TantrumCon. They have demos of some games that will be on Kickstarter. So those at TantrumCon have a chance to actually play the game before they back it.
It's like TantrumCon could be like the launch party for some big Kickstarters. That'd be cool.
Ooh, let's make that an official thing.
That'd be cool.
It will be for at least one or two, right? Because Keymaster is going to be demoing some of their games for the first time.
Jurassic Parts will be.
Jurassic 20th Parts Century, yeah. We'll be doing I think they are already live now.
Right.
We just did a preview video for their Jurassic Parts game, so check that one out. We also just this past Saturday in real life, which is probably 2 weeks ago, did our first ever Saturday morning board game show.
Yeah, that went really well.
Live on YouTube. That was a lot of fun. My kids got involved, which they were very excited. Their first live video.
Yep.
And then Jonah and Chantel joined us as well. They've been hanging out with us a lot recently, and they jumped in on that show. So that was a lot of fun. Man, all kinds of cool
stuff. We're going to have to move Dan to Journeyman soon so that we can
have
get
more,
more interns and apprentices.
He's getting bumped up like every 6 months.
I know. It's like he's got some more interns coming. Dan's got to keep. He's got to hold out his top spot. So
hold on to it, Dan. Awesome. Oh, man. I feel like we've got a lot of other cool things coming down the pipe, too. Kevin has been brainstorming lots of fun ideas that we need to have extra time in life so we can create all this cool stuff.
I'm not really an idea person, but sometimes it just like hits me like at what time of morning was that?
I get emails from Kevin at like 6 a.m. like, here's 13 ideas we should use. I'm not even awake. What are you talking about?
Sometimes I'm still in bed.
Sometimes my brain is like thinking about this. I'm like, might as well just write it down.
Way to go. We've also got our own Kickstarter, which will be coming in March, April. When are we doing
April,
that?
Beginning of April.
April. So we'll get through TantrumCon, then we'll tell you about
already
that.
Already got promos being lined up, game bundles. Got stuffs.
It's going to be cool. I can't wait. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us for another sweet episode. We kept it nice and tight today, but we'll be rambling on yet again next week. And we hope you'll join us then. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tantrum House Board Game Podcast. If you liked any part of this at all, find and follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and tantrumhouse.com. Like us, share us, email us, call us, or send us a postcard to Tantrum House, 306 Barry Drive, that's B-A-R-R-Y, Greer, South Carolina, 29650.